You're listening to the Restless Wanderer podcast by Paul Coulter, and this is part 8 of a series in the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, "This month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbour, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. The animals you choose must be year-old males, without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or the goats. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all the members of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. Then they are to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and tops of the door frames of the houses where they eat the lambs. That same night they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire, along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Do not eat the meat raw or boiled in water, but roasted over a fire with the head, legs, and internal organs. Do not leave any of it until morning. If some is left till morning, you must burn it. This is how you are to eat it, with your cloak tucked into your belt, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. Eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. On that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn of both people and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. This is a day you are to commemorate for the generations to come. You shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. For 7 days you are to eat bread made without yeast. On the first day, remove the yeast from your houses, for whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day until the seventh must be cut off from Israel. On the first day hold a sacred assembly, and another one on the seventh day. Do not work on all these days except to prepare food for everyone to eat. That is all you may do. Celebrate the festival of unleavened bread, because it was on this very day that I brought your divisions out of Egypt. Celebrate this day as a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. In the first month you were to eat bread made without yeast, from the evening of the 14th day until the evening of the 21st day. For 7 days no yeast is to be found in your houses, and anyone, whether foreigner or native born, who eats anything with yeast in it must be cut off from the community of Israel. Eat nothing made with yeast. Wherever you live, you must eat unleavened bread. Then Moses summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it into the blood in the basin and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. None of you shall go out of your door of your house until morning. When the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and sides of the door frame and will pass over that doorway. And he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and strike you down. Obey these instructions as a lasting ordinance for you and your descendants. When you enter the land that the Lord will give you as he promised, observe this ceremony. And when your children ask of you, 'What does this ceremony mean to you?' then tell them, 'It is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt and spared our homes when he struck down the Egyptians.' Then the people bowed down and worshipped. The Israelites did just what the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron. At midnight the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not a house without someone dead." We'll pause there after verse 30. Now, there's really not a lot to say in commenting on this passage. It's fairly self-explanatory. One link that we need to make, of course, from a Christian perspective, is to remember that Paul, the Apostle Paul, in writing to the Corinthians, describes Jesus as our Passover lamb. So this festival of Passover has a significance for us as the New Testament people of God, as Christians. because it points us towards Jesus. But Passover is the greatest, or perhaps the most well-known of the feasts that the Jewish people still celebrate today. In the Old Testament, it wasn't necessarily the most significant of those dates. The Day of Atonement could be said to be the greatest of the festivals when you read about them in Leviticus. But the Jewish people today, although they still have the Day of Atonement, they don't follow the Old Testament pattern of sacrifices and the scapegoat and so on that you can read about in the book of Leviticus. But Passover remains a very significant occasion in the calendar of the at least of Orthodox Jews today, and in fact of many Jews, even if they're not particularly religious. It became a very strong cultural occasion. It's the time when the family come together. It's the time whenever they take this special feast. And it has a great significance because here is the Lord's redemption of the Israelites. It's significant how God brings this about. He could have just punished the Egyptians and spared the Israelites as he did so many times during the plagues, and we read about that, but he chose not to do it that way. Instead, there was a response of faith that the Israelites had to make, and there was a lamb that had to be slain. It's reminding us and telling us that redemption is on the basis of sacrifice. Forgiveness is on the basis of sacrifice. Without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness for sins, Leviticus would tell us. But redemption, being set free from the power of Satan and of sin, does not come without the blood of Jesus shed for us, and without us making a response to his blood shed for us, a response of faith. For the Israelites, the response of faith was to eat this festival, eat this feast rather, and this meal of lamb, either lamb or the kid of a goat. It could be either a goat or a sheep that was eaten, but they have to do it, and they have to do it in the way that God commands them. They do it using unleavened bread. And of course, this becomes the 7-day festival of unleavened bread, as we read about it. The Passover comes at the same time as that 7-day festival of unleavened bread. The two belong together in the calendar of Israel. But the unleavened bread is a reminder for them of the haste with which they have to leave Egypt. For the same reason, they have to dress in a certain way whenever they're taking this feast, with their cloak tucked into their belt and their sandals on their feet. They're ready to go. They're ready to hit the road, if you like. They're ready to leave Egypt. They're doing this with confidence that God is going to deliver them, with confidence that God is going to strike down the Egyptians in this greatest of plagues, but that God is not going to strike them down, that he will pass over. And that's the meaning, that instead of bringing judgment on their households, he passes over those houses that have the blood on the door frames. The people obey the commands that God gives through Moses, and so they're spared. So it requires a response of faith. Of course, the nature of the lamb is significant too. It's to be a male. It's to be the unblemished lamb, a lamb that has no diseases or defects. And that's a reminder that what's needed is the very best. First of all, God requires the very best, not the what's left over, not the worst. But also, it's a symbol of the perfection of this lamb. The lamb, of course, representing Jesus, our Passover. And so, it's a year-old male without defect, at the prime of its life. The amount of lamb that's to be eaten is just what each person needs. There's a perfection in the provision that's here. They're provided with what they need. And so this festival of Passover continues to today. The hyssop too is significant. It's with hyssop that they're to paint the blood on the doorframe. Hyssop is a bitter herb, and it's a reminder of the bitterness of the cross. But it's to be a lasting ordinance. It's something that's to be passed on. It's expected that future generations of Israelite children will ask their parents, "What does this ceremony mean to you?" And they're to say, "This is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord." Verse 27, it's interesting. It is called a sacrifice. Even though the people eat the feast, and the priests, who don't exist at this point in their history, of course, they haven't been appointed yet, but the priesthood aren't involved in the Passover, in the death of the animal, or in this festival at all. So it's not like many of the other sacrifices that the priests make on behalf of the people. But it is a sacrifice, and it's a sacrifice to God who passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt and spared them when he struck down the Egyptians. It's a reminder of God's provision and God's faithfulness. The Egyptians, of course, are not spared in the judgment, and this dreadful plague, this dreadful judgment comes upon them. And so we read as in verse 30 that Pharaoh and all his officials and all of the Egyptians got up and were wailing because there wasn't a house where someone had not died. Let's read on then, Exodus chapter 12, verse 31. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said and go, and also bless me." The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we will all die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. The Israelites journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many other people went up with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. With the dough the Israelites had brought from Egypt, they baked loaves of unleavened bread. The dough was without yeast, because they had been driven out of Egypt and did not have time to prepare food for themselves. Now the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's divisions left Egypt. Because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt, on this night all the Israelites are to keep vigil in to honour the Lord for the generations to come. So here are the Egyptians leaving, or the Israelites leaving Egypt. They're a huge nation by this point, 600,000 men plus women and children. So we have to assume somewhere between somewhere around 1.5 million people in total forming the nation of Israel. It says that other people went with them. We don't know whether they're amongst that number or not. We don't know whether those people became assimilated into the Israelites. We don't know whether they were Egyptians or maybe some of the other ethnic minorities who had been enslaved in Egypt, like the Hebrews. But certainly others left with them. And also large droves of livestock. We've seen that before in Exodus. They had their own livestock, even though they were in some form of slavery. They were able to possess their own livestock. When the plagues came, theirs were not affected in the way that the Egyptians' livestock was. And there's the mention of 430 years. And if you read back into the book of Genesis, you'll know that God had foretold to Abraham through a dream that his descendants would be in Egypt for 400 years. It was until the time whenever God decided that the sins of the Amorites, the sins of the inhabitants of Canaan, had reached their full extent. So during these 400 years, time has passed. The Canaanites have become increasingly sinful. They're ready to be judged by God, or God is ready to judge them through the Israelites. But also the Israelites have grown into a great nation. And you have to remember in Genesis, they were small in number, only 70 when they went down into Egypt. And so they were led by the father figure of the family. It was the patriarchal time, if you like, the fathers, the patriarchs leading the people. That isn't going to work with 1.5 million people. They're going to need a new system of government, which of course God is going to give them when we get into the chapter 20 and Sinai and the giving of the law. But for now, they're being led out simply by Moses, following Moses. And they plunder the Egyptians. The Egyptians gladly give them all of the silver and gold that they ask for. They are glad to see the back of them. And this is just as God had said to Moses would happen. Now, let's read on then, verse 43 of Exodus 12. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "These are the regulations for the Passover meal. No foreigner may eat it. Any slave you have bought may eat it after you have circumcised him, but a temporary resident or a hired worker may not eat it. It must be eaten inside the house. Take none of the meat outside the house. Do not break any of the bones. The whole community of Israel must celebrate it. A foreigner residing among you who wants to celebrate the Lord's Passover must have all the males in his household circumcised. Then he may take part like one born in the land. No uncircumcised male may eat it. The same law applies both to the native-born and to the foreigner residing among you." All the Israelites did just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, and on that very day the Lord brought the Israelites out of Egypt by their divisions. So here again is the statement of the regulations for the Passover, but now the focus is not so much on how to celebrate the meal. There's a little bit of that. It has to be eaten inside. None of the meat is to be taken outside. The bones are not to be broken. That's another pointer forward to Jesus on the cross, where we're told that his bones were not broken. And that was in fulfillment of this Passover picture, the picture of the Passover lamb. Jesus, of course, was crucified, according to John's Gospel, around the time when the Passover lambs were being killed. So there's a very poignant parallel. But the main regulation that's here is, what about foreigners? Well, it's very clear, foreigners are not to take this meal unless they're circumcised. In other words, this is a distinctive meal that is to be a marker for the people of Israel. And circumcision, of course, is the sign of entry into the covenant that God makes with the nation of Israel. So they can join the nation. It's not that they're excluded in that sense. But before they can take the Passover, they have to take this step of circumcision, the painful step of marking themselves, physically marking themselves as belonging to God. That sign, which is a visible physical sign of cutting off the flesh, dying to self-rule and coming under the rule of God. The Passover is for the Israelites. Temporary residents, hired workers cannot eat it. Slaves can be circumcised and brought into this festival. And foreigners can by the same token. God leads the Israelites out of Egypt. It's very clear that it's God who has done this. Moses may be the spokesperson of God, but strictly speaking, it is God who is leading his people out of Egypt. They're coming out to belong to him, to be free to worship him. Let's read on then, Exodus chapter 13, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses, "Consecrate to me every firstborn male. The first offspring of every womb among the Israelites belongs to me, whether human or animal." Then Moses said to the people, "Commemorate this day, the day you came out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, because the Lord brought you out of it with a mighty hand. Eat nothing containing yeast. Today, in the month of Aviv, you are leaving. When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hivites, and Jebusites, the land he swore to your ancestors to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you are to observe this ceremony in this month. For 7 days eat bread made without yeast, and on the seventh day hold a festival to the Lord. Eat unleavened bread during those 7 days. Nothing with yeast on it is to be seen among you, nor shall any yeast be seen anywhere within your borders. On that day tell your son, 'I do this because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt.' This observance will be for you like a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead that this law of the Lord is to be on your lips. For the Lord brought you out of Egypt with his mighty hand. You must keep this ordinance at the appointed time, year after year. After the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and gives it to you, as he promised on oath to you and your ancestors, you are to give over to the Lord the first offspring of every womb. All the firstborn males of your livestock belong to the Lord. Redeem with a lamb every firstborn donkey, but if you do not redeem it, break its neck. Redeem every firstborn among your sons. In days to come, when your son asks you, 'What does this mean?' say to him, 'With a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed the firstborn of both people and animals in Egypt. This is why I sacrifice to the Lord the first male offspring of every womb and redeem each of my firstborn sons. And it will be like a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead that the Lord brought us out of Egypt with his mighty hand. Now again, not too much to say on this. It's obviously a continuation of thinking about the Passover and its significance. But here the command is to consecrate the firstborn to God. For animals, they're either to be sacrificed, or in the case of an animal like a donkey, another animal sacrificed in its place. In the case of children, sons, they are to be consecrated to God with a sacrifice, a payment. And this is a reminder again of what God did when he punished the Egyptians, when he brought judgment on the firstborn. So the firstborn son has a particular responsibility and a particular significance in God's covenant with the Israelites. It's a sign again. It's a reminder. That, of course, should make us think of the reminder that God has given us, communion, which carries over, in a sense, from Passover in the New Testament. It's a reminder to us, a constant coming back to remember what God has done for us in Christ, to remember his death for us and his resurrection from the dead and the redemption that we have in him. I should emphasize, though, of course, it's not that children are not to be sacrificed. That's very clear. The children are to be redeemed. They're to be bought back. So there's no suggestion here of human sacrifice. God never approves of that. The life of humans is sacred. But the firstborn is dedicated to God in a special way. The promise is here again of entering into the land flowing with milk and honey. And this remembrance is to carry on throughout the generations so that they will never forget where they've come from. They will never forget that they are a redeemed people.